Welcome to the Predictable Revenue Podcast, where sales leaders teach you what's working for them and how you can build it yourself.
This episode of the Predictable Revenue Podcast is brought to you by SDR Pods. Learn how we can build you a fully equipped sales development team to execute on personalized multi-channel prospecting and book you more meetings at the link below.
Hi guys, welcome back to another episode of the Predictable Revenue Podcast. We have a really interesting one for you today. If you're not adapting to the unique needs of your buying influencers, then you're missing out on driving larger and more strategic opportunities. I'm your host, Sarah Hicks, and today on the Predictable Revenue Podcast, I'm going to be chatting to an expert about asymmetric selling. He's a leading expert on sales, generating more than $1 billion in just 5 years, an uncommon accomplishment. He has led nearly 30,000 sales meetings in his 28-year career with Fortune 500s, SMBs, and startup businesses. In his first book, Billion Dollar Sales Secrets, he shares 15 secrets to help inspire salespeople to rise to meet today's challenges, ignite their dreams, and success. Joe Parenteau, welcome to the Predictable Revenue Podcast.
Hey, great to be here. Thanks, Sarah. And hello to everyone on the podcast.
Well, before we dive into the really tactical stuff today, Joe, I would love to hear a bit about your history and how you got to where you are today.
No, absolutely, Sarah. It's been quite a ride. My background, first of all, is I'm Native American, so I'm a member of the Little Shell Tribe of Chippewa Cree Indians of northern Montana. And that's always interesting because I have, you know, kind of one foot in a traditional culture and the other foot in kind of how people see me today as, you know, suburbia, working for a professional organization, etc. But I was the first in my family to ever go to college. And no one ever encouraged me to go to college or pursue things like that. And the path to where I am today was one that kind of took zigs and zags, but it led me through the military. And I found sales accidentally. I was a communication major and electrical engineering major. I loved the communication part, really didn't like the electrical engineering part. And at the time, people, the tech industry was booming. And my first sales territory was Silicon Valley during its growth spurt. So it was just a wonderful time to be connected in the industry of high-tech selling and get to work with some really great companies through their fastest part of their growth. And that's how I got started. 28 years later, still here. Leading sales teams, love selling. It's the best career. So if any of your listeners aren't salespeople or don't think that that's the strongest part of their career, it's worth the investment to practice. I'm still practicing.
Yeah, absolutely. It's so interesting. And there are a couple of pieces of your life then, these two kind of huge pieces, the fact that you're Native American and then your time in the military, that both have had quite an impact on the sales strategies that you've kind of designed. And you've managed to take bits and pieces from all these parts of your lives and apply them to sales. First, I want to touch on the Native American piece because you have a very a different perspective of time, right? Traditionally, you view time a different way. Tell me about that and how you think that kind of translates to sales.
The Native American way of looking at time is nonlinear. And this may seem kind of odd to people when I talk about it, but we think of time. If you look at the if people have a traditional watch dial, they'll notice that the dial is shaped in a circle. And so that's kind of a hint of, and people have seen sundials, but that's the Native American view of time is this kind of circular, nonlinear reference to time. The, it's ever flowing. It's just a different way to kind of perceive the way that we look at things. And it's helpful in sales because if you think about a sales process, I think of it as a nonlinear occurrence. Usually when you're at the end of the sales, you know, cycle, you've made a sale, that's the start of something new. That's the start of a deeper relationship with your customer and, you know, something to build on and keep going and create deeper connectedness to your customers.
Very interesting. Okay. And then the other piece was the military experience, of course. So yeah, talk to me about, I mean, that's a big part of what we're going to be talking about today. So talk to me about when you kind of made the connection between what you were doing in the military and the strategies you were learning there and sales, and then we'll dive into the topic of today.
Yeah, when I was in the military, I never made the connection to sales. It was Native Americans serve in the military at a greater rate than any other minority group in the U.S. It's part of our warrior culture. So when I was thinking about what to do in the future, I actually made a proclamation. I'm not going to join the military. that eroded pretty quickly. I started looking at what else was I going to do. Interestingly enough, one of my things that I was going to do was I was trying to sell. I got a job working in the stockroom at Nordstrom's, stocking t-shirts and everything in the men's furnishing section. That wasn't paying the bills for me, so I went in the military. And after I got out of the military and I started in a professional sales career and started, you know, taking sales training, learning about, you know, different ways to sell, I came back to my military roots. And really recently, probably I'd say in the last 8 to 10 years, selling has become more complex. In the military, we learned, I had the privilege of serving during a time during the Cold War, which things were relatively stable. We had one primary adversary, the Soviet Union. We were in detente. We learned all about how to fight this kind of nuclear war that would never come. If anyone watches the game, the movie War Games, that kind of gives you a picture of what the life was like at the time. And then the wall came down when I was in the military, changed everything. Absolutely. No longer did we have this adversary. We had lots of different things that we were battling. And even till today, the quote, the enemy in a war is not always going to be wearing a uniform. It's not, and this is where this term asymmetrical comes from. Symmetry is when you have, you know, kind of one for one, and asymmetry is when it's not like that. It's not congruent. And that's what I really started noticing in the selling process. You've got more buying influences. You've got, a lot more complexity, and it seemed to fit.
Yeah. Interesting. So the real kind of, foundation of asymmetric warfare is that it's, of course, there's asymmetry. It's one salesperson against potentially many unknown kind of, we wouldn't call them rivals necessarily in sales, but for the purpose of the analogy, the buying committee is the enemy here.
It's not really the enemy. It's the concept of asymmetry in warfare is, hey, you no longer have one for one. Your enemy in warfare is now not wearing a uniform, and they might be hiding behind trees or
right.
Doing things differently. Cyber warfare, you don't even see them. They're coming through computer lines. So in the parallel that I made to the selling process really isn't adversarial as much as it is tactics for how you get to your goal with your customers. It's dealing with this asymmetrical behavior that is necessary in corporations today. Purchasing has come under, a lot more tighter controls, Sarbanes-Oxley, and the stakes are higher, competition's, more fierce between companies. And so they want to make sure that they're not making bad decisions. And thus you get greater and greater levels of these buying committees and influencers on your sale, mm-hmm. whether salespeople know it or not. So gone is the day of a seller going in and knocking on a company's door, meeting with one person and, inking the deal. Now it's, under control of the CFO, a buying committee, et cetera. So that's really where I developed this concept of asymmetry and drawing that parallel.
Okay, got it. So taking the strategies from, that parallel that you've drawn, how can a salesperson go about, attempting to penetrate or attempting to kind of close a deal with an asymmetric, complex sort of account?
I You know, some of our selling methodologies identify this. You know, one of my favorites in thinking about this is Holden. Holden identified this concept of a fox in their selling methodology. And a fox is somebody who has the best outcome of the company and the organization in mind, but may not wield positional and organizational power, but they have tremendous amounts of influence. This really got me thinking about who do I not see when you're selling in an organization? Who's involved that are known and who's involved that's unknown? And so really building your strategy for how you connect value with your customers happens across departmental lines. It happens at different levels of the organization, the CXO, the lines of business. And also, depending on what you're selling, it's most likely going to touch one of the infrastructure arms of the company. Mm-hmm. And I view the infrastructure arms of the company as HR, people, infrastructure, or technology infrastructure.
Okay, got it. And you mentioned to me in a conversation offline that it's kind of about uniting the different groups, right? There is this asymmetric group, but you've got to bring them all together in order to move forward with some kind of sale. So how do you work to unite these different groups and these different arms that you're talking about?
And this is probably helpful for marketers who might be tuning in as well. The concept of a selling value proposition has to change based upon the dynamic nature, the asymmetry of the organizations that you're selling to. You really have to key into what are the popular KPIs that are driving the business overall, and then what are the KPIs driving those departments and those departmental leaders. So, for instance, at a C-level, you know, the most, you know, kind of organizational level, they're concerned about some of the foundational metrics of the business. You know, what's our revenue? What's our profit? You know, market share, you know, cash on hand, available capital, things like that. As you get down in the organization, though, you're going to encounter, you know, different types of metrics that are related to, you know, budget variance or, you know, customer service. It's related to customer retention, average response time, you know, manufacturing cycle time reduction, selling, you know, opportunity win ratios, cross-selling rates. So these are some of the things that are at the line of business level. And then at the infrastructure level, it's, you know, what's our ROI? What's our uptime, downtime in HR? You know, what's our you know, employee engagement rates, training costs, things like that. So stringing together your value proposition through this asymmetrical landscape, you really have to know where you're at and sell the value up or down. Mm-hmm. And what this looks like is, like I just said, if you're working at, you know, at the line of business, customer call center, hey, we're going to help you get more connected with your customers so that your customer engagement rates are going to increase. This will drive greater levels of profitability and revenue for the company. So there I'm starting at a customer service, you know, exec, and I'm selling up to the CXO. Even though the CXO is not there, you want to give that person, you want to empower them with the vision for selling up.
Right. So empowering whoever you engage with to kind of be the champion internally for you. How do you identify who you should, you know, mark as your champion?
Yeah, that's always tough because sometimes you wonder if you get it right.
Yeah.
Typically they'll exhibit you know, common behaviors. They'll have, and this is where I like the Holden methodology, because they talk about, hey, this person's invested. These are some of the signs and signals that they'll give you. They'll talk about the greater good. They can see they're not so insulated. The other thing that's great about this technique of selling value across boundaries, across organizational boundaries, is it spots the people who are not strategic. anyone who has ever said, hey, I'm the person. So knowing that this asymmetrical behavior exists today in selling is complex, whenever I spot somebody who goes, just deal with me, I interpret that as a huge red flag and something to steer away from, because that person generally doesn't have the organizational capital to help get the deal done. They don't have the inquisitiveness or the curiosity to bridge the gap with other people and to really make this a win for the company. So I view that as a warning sign. But likewise, whenever you talk to people and they're able to traverse the organization and bring in other people, that's a good sign.
Okay. So keeping an eye out for somebody who's sort of open to a collaborative approach where they are, you know, mentioning other people that might be involved in the buying decision and kind of more open in that way rather than just going like, don't bother those people, only talk to me. And it's like, maybe it's just a bit of a smokescreen that the upper levels have said, like, you just hold that one back.
Yep. And exactly. It's when, so if I'm selling to an airline and I want to be more strategic and I feel like I'm pigeonholed somewhere, I might ask, you know, hey, how does this impact, you know, cost per revenue mile for passenger volume? And if they don't know, it's fine, you know, but you want to understand, you know, what we're about to do, how does it affect the greater business?
Right.
And if that person can't tell you, it's great to ask, you know, well, hey, how can we find this out? How can we bridge this gap? Who in your organization might know this? They'll say, okay, well, why do you need to know? Well, it's important that, you know, whatever we're selling you, you actually receive the value from and you use. And we want to make sure that we have our customer success plans aligned with what you're planning to do. I call this selling through the close. A lot of people today will think, oh, it's great whenever the sale's made and we get the PO, whatever it's done. Wrong. Customers are thinking beyond that. And they never stop thinking about that, even when you, quote, have the deal in hand. So the more you can keep selling through that close, again, this is that nonlinear time that I go back to. I'm always thinking about, before I even close the deal, I'm thinking about the next 2 or 3, 5 deals that I could spawn off of this one and how that customer relationship that I'm engaging with is going to grow and develop over time.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, that makes sense. Okay, so you're identifying who can act as your champion. You're looking for a kind of set of clues that they exhibit that's going to let you know, like, okay, I think I found the right person because they're answering these questions. They seem to have a sense of what's going on beyond just their own department. How do you then sort of encourage them to actually pull in all these other decision makers so that you can, you know, have that final decision made by the person who actually can share some of the budget?
In my book, I talk about this concept of, and a lot of people have been selling, and even sales leaders encourage, you know, evaluation plans, you know, joint accountability plans, things like that. I created something called the sales ladder, which is a visual representation of how you can sell with your customer, because I'm very big about not selling to your customer, selling something we do with our customers. Yet a lot of our language and methodologies are related to, you know, hey, this is what you do. This is how they respond. And I'm like, why can't we just do something together, selling with each other and understanding where we're at with value? And the concept of the rungs of a ladder as you climb them, if you've ever, maybe this is just me and my family, these old rickety ladders. But if you've ever gotten an old rickety ladder and the rungs are misaligned, you're not going to get very far safely. Same is true in your sale. If you think about, hey, the top of the ladder is the customer payoff. What are they going to do to get to their goal? What does this look like for them? And then what are the steps along the way that we can go up this ladder? And one of those is the buying process. You know, hey, who's going to be involved in buying decisions? What do you have budget authority for? Who else needs to be involved and why? Being curious about how they make decisions, I always tell my sales team, picture yourself in this company for the day. You just got hired on. You're part of the group. How are things going to get done? I'm going to pay you based upon the successful outcome. So what's life look like if you're sitting in their shoes, and developing that perceptual position if you are in the customer's shoes exactly. What does that look like? And it really helps bridge a greater degree of empathy in the selling process. And really from a sales coaching standpoint, this helps as well. So whenever I'm coaching and trying to get information from my team, I ask them these questions. Hey, you know, who's involved in the buying decision? Tell me a little bit about them. What type of questions have you asked them to get greater degrees of clarity on where you're going? How are you mapping that process out to them? And these are all, I think, helpful things to get you and deal with that that asymmetry that's there. Most people who say it's not there, they might say, oh, we're a small company, nobody cares. Guess what? They do. I mean, you might have a decision that's made in the short term. I know many family businesses who there's someone that they're answering to. Maybe it's their wife. Maybe it's other members of the family. Maybe they have a board of advisors. But even the smallest companies have governance councils and things to keep them on track.
Yeah, it's true. So there's a bit of asymmetry kind of in any business dealing today, really. It's never going to be, as you said, just that one-to-one. Do you think that this particular approach applies to kind of any sale that somebody might be making into an organization, like whether it's a land and expand type deal or whether it's just absolutely brand new penetrating an account? Do you think that it applies in all cases?
I even think it applies in sales of things like consumer goods, people who are making a purchasing decision. What will my significant other think if I make this decision? Those exist. You want to have good outcomes for all involved. The trick really is understanding how to move. And this is one thing that I think we've gotten away from. Kind of closing techniques. A lot of people assume the close just is going to happen. And so that part of selling skills has really died off a little bit in importance. But I think there's a way to revitalize that, because there's a time to move people to act, and you can't be in this continuous loop of just waiting. It's like no one dances until someone goes up and says, hey, would you like to dance?
Right.
And there comes a time in the business relationship when you've had, and this is in the ladder, when we've gone through and those rungs of the ladder are level, and we've gotten to the place that we've said and agreed in advance that we're going to go to, hey, this is great. Let's take that next step and get this kicked off today. Too many people don't ask those questions. They don't ask for the sale. And it's helpful because it propels that relationship forward and it keeps the cycle moving.
Interesting. I'm kind of interested, this is slightly off topic, it's going back to the idea of time. I'm interested what the kind of Native American perspective on progress is, because of course, with the kind of colonial view, it's the progress is linear as well as time. It's like moving forward and not going back, but it's not a, a flywheel. It's linear. So how does progress factor into that nonlinear time?
So there's a concept in answering this, and in the background, anyone's hearing those noises, it's testing time for tornadoes in Texas. It's 12 noon, but anyway, honor is super important. And so in looking at time, we honor the past to inform the future. We look to the past as historical guidance and insight and wisdom to inform where we're at today and where we're going in the future. So that's how that time comes about. And in a selling environment, this is where, kind of after action reports and win and close rate reports come in handy, because when you bring the power and the insights of all your selling you know, engagements to bear to where you are right now, that's somewhat of the same thing that you're doing. You're looking to the past and the wisdom of the past to inform the future. So I find it very helpful. And it's one of these things that until you start exploring, until I started writing the book, I didn't know that I had a lot of these unconscious, competent, you know, positions and beliefs that when I shared them with other people, they're like, oh man, that is so not the way I think. And you need to share a little bit more of that. So I was like, okay, I get it. But it was kind of part and parcel of how I grew up. I grew up, you know, with certain words, and my dad saying, you know, hey, Ozom Akwa, pay my cho. And that means let's go and it's time to eat. And so I always thought that was just everyone said that to each other. And then you go eat at someone's house and you're like, okay.
When am I going to hear it?
You don't realize you're different until, you know, it's compared to someone else. So
yeah, absolutely. Interesting. Okay. I'd love to hear about how, what the impact of this different type of view of this selling process is for sales leaders. What does it mean for the sales leader? We've spoken from the kind of salesperson perspective, but what can sales leaders do to empower this?
The best thing for sales leaders to do is to coach your sellers to be more present, to be more curious. To ask those questions that can get that information. So when leaders are asking sellers, there's always a degree of abstraction that happens because, you know, we're not in the sales cycle with our team when they're having these conversations. Now it's, if you're not going on ride-alongs and having customer meetings yourself, definitely change that, you know, because you're going to learn a lot by going with your team to those one-on-one sales calls. And it's also an opportunity for you to model some behavior. But to show them and ask them about, you know, hey, how do you know what is important at the executive level? What are some of the KPIs that are aligning the value of our sale with the company? And if they, you know, pause and give you a blank stare, you know, how might you need to find that out? It's a clue for telling you maybe we don't have alignment. Maybe our you know, degree of faith in where we're at is overweighted. So if you know everything about cycle time reduction and how your value proposition aligns there, that gives you a clue. Hey, we're stuck here at the line of business executive level. We need to connect more to the executive level. And also, one thing I didn't mention is selling downward. Sometimes when you're talking to the, you know, to the C-levels, they'll say, yeah, this is going to improve our profit margins, you know, incredibly. And you have to be curious and ask that next question and say, okay, well, tell me a little bit about some of the line of business processes that this affects. You know, what does this do to your cost of sale? Oh, yeah, well, I think, you know, it's going to help decrease our cost of sale, but you bring up a good point. I've never really thought about that. And they start thinking, you know, even though they're, you know, quote, the very important top officers of the company, and you would like to say, hey, they're going to drive everything for me, giving them that introspection to dive deeper through their organization and see the patterns helps them make better decisions. So sharing that with them and then even taking it down into the infrastructure layer, you know, and when you do this, not only is it going to improve your cost of sale, what about your infrastructure? Is it going to help with your readiness? You know, are your systems going to be at a greater availability level? And how is it going to empower your people to be more engaged? They start thinking through these things, and that's when you have answers across the spectrum. Then you know, okay, we've thought through this. We have good coverage with all the different influences that we could have. And even departmentally, you know, asking those questions to just get understanding of who's engaged in the process, how, what their process is. It's really easy to just assume that they, our sellers, know it, but I'll give you a great story in case in point. I worked with a company where the CEOs didn't even know their process. They had just merged with another company and they had thought they knew the process and they didn't. The process had changed on them. There was new things that were imposed, new governance, and they apologized and said, you know, hey, we thought we had this under control and we knew what was going on, but they didn't. So don't always assume that just based on someone's position that they know the entire process and how things happen. Sometimes even executives in their own company, you know, the processes change on them and they need, you know, they need to come up to speed on the complexity in their own company. And, you know, from a sales standpoint, how can we be experts at that if we're not constantly just reaffirming and getting clarity?
Okay, awesome. And how can a sales leader drive adoption with this type of strategy? Because we all know salespeople are a little bit of the lone wolf type a lot of times. And they might say like, well, I don't know, what I'm doing right now is working for me pretty well. I'm hitting my quota. I'll listen to that advice and I won't actually take it. So how do you drive that adoption?
Yeah, I think that, you know, complexity kills. That's why a lot of the sales methodologies that are out there today, I love them all. And then I equally dislike them all. And sellers probably do this as well, because when it comes down to it, they're not simple enough. You know, you can picture these mental images in your head, but I'll just take, you know, Miller Hyman as an example. You know, strategic selling, you know, you've got gold sheets, green sheets, blue sheets, all these sheets that you can fill out that help you get to your path. Oh my gosh, I've already, you know, I'm freaking out trying to get all my stuff into CRM anyway. And then I've got my call notes. The last thing I'm going to do is fill out anything else.
Right.
So providing them these mental maps of how do they go about doing this? This doesn't have to be complex. Really thinking about it, you know, from a simple block diagram, and that's where this ladder concept comes into play. So each rung of my ladder has, you know, kind of, it's a level dimension, you know, hey, are we in line with our customer? Are we aligned with value? And then, you know, what are the elements of this ladder? It's kind of like the top rung, the middle rung, and the bottom rung really represents these three key areas, you know, the CXO, the line of business, the infrastructure execs. So thinking about that, in the book, there's reference to it, but I actually had to carve out about 60,000 words of my book, which will probably be the basis for my next book. Okay. Just on this one concept. But I think getting that common language for everyone to know, leaders speaking the same language about where deals are at in the process, you know, how do we progress them? You know, whatever your selling methodology stages are, you know, is it, you know, a stage one deal, stage two deal, stage three? And when you say those things, does everyone on your team know exactly what that means? Because if you're speaking the same language, then, you know, it's easier to move forward. I was in the military, we always used to say it's easier to course correct a moving object. So once you start getting moving on something like this, it's easier to make adjustments. But once the sellers hear that, hey, our leadership team is bought in and the expectations now are to traverse these different layers of the business in every sale to understand, you know, who's involved, how, and getting that alignment really helps. And it's something simple that I think can be implemented, you know, just having that awareness of, you know, sales are complex, you know, how many people are involved in buying decision here. And then if companies want to even do, you know, adjust their scoring metrics, highly recommend that. Because if you're just thinking about sales in an old fashioned way of, oh, great, this is an opportunity. And here's, you know, quote, the, you know, the person who's making the decision, the decision maker, you've got it all wrong, because there's likely 18 of them.
Okay, got it. And what is the business impact that you've seen when teams do sell like this effectively, or when salespeople do?
Bigger deals, by far. Less competition, because when you're going for the easy way, That's what everyone wants to do. Everyone wants the quick win. But being a little bit more curious, being engaged longer, asking those next questions and really linking, what the customer needs to a business outcome that's strategic, you're going to be among, you know, the elite sellers out there, and elite sales teams, because very few people do that. As much as people want to say that they do and say that they've invested in the sales training to get their team to the next level, very few people operate at this level with the care. Usually it's, hey, I smell blood in the water and I'm going after it. And they over identify with what a successful outcome looks like without diving in deeper to what that might mean for their customer and what that might mean for the company, all the different dimensions of a company, and any decision that's made, even though it's departmental, still has implications on the entire business. Another good case in point, I worked with a hospital who had a shadow IT organization, and they decided to go off and do their own thing and departmentally. And a lot of people are doing this today with ubiquity of technology. They're like, we're not going to wait on IT to make the decision for us. We're just going to go ahead and do this. However, what they found out is they were very successful in this approach. And sure enough, the rest of the company caught wind of it. Other departments caught wind of it. And they were like, hey, we want to do what this department's doing. And they started copycatting. And then it became a governance nightmare because all of these different systems weren't talking together. And IT had to get involved. And it had a tremendous expense on the company to get things right. So if you're ahead of the curve, you could avoid potential pain later on and actually increase your sales at a faster rate. So you might win in the short term, but in the long term, and once we found and identified this, we were able to bring the right people in and we built that structure so that we didn't, encounter some of these things. And it works, and you'll have greater business impact and access to the levels of the organization. You'll be treated as a trusted advisor in the business. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's something that we all as salespeople need to strive for. And I think there is a bit of a movement that is returning that way. I think that was the kind of traditional salesperson back to that idea of the one person knocking on the other's door. And we have lost that in a big way, I think, with the, digitization of the world. And it now seems that we really are needing to find our way back to that. And this is definitely an amazing approach to help salespeople get there. So thank you so much for sharing the strategies that stem from asymmetric warfare, but of course, asymmetric sales is what we're talking about today. Joe, you have one book that you've touched on a couple of times, and you have another book that's coming out. Tell us about both of them.
Yeah, so I'm writing two additional books right now. So the sales letter concept is one that I'm expanding on. I don't know if I'm going to call it the sales letter or not, but that's one that I'm working on. And then another one that I'm working on is just doesn't fit with that pattern. I don't know what I'm going to name it, but it really gets down into, the core of how we sell, kind of more like seller motivations and what to do to bring your entire sales team to a different place. Very influenced by some of the work. There's a psychologist, his name was Dr. Leo Biscaglia, wrote a great book called Love. He was known as the Love Professor. And he has some tremendous things about how we approach people and how we have, relationships built. And I've always been thinking about how those things can apply in a selling scenario and selling situation. So it's kind of a mindset motivation, bringing a little bit more love and attention to the people who are involved in the selling process on your own team and with a customer team. So not sure where that's going to end up, but I'm excited about it as well. Once you write your first book, it's a tremendous feeling. You get it out there, you see it, and I'm like, okay, again, I want to do it. I want to do another one.
Nice.
Very and cool. Especially and when you get feedback. You know, I got an email from someone in Russia, in Russian. I had it translated, and they're like, "Oh, we appreciated this," and so that's definitely Octane that helps keep you going.
Definitely, very cool. And the first book is Billion Dollar Sales Secrets. It's available everywhere, right? Everyone can get it. Where can they find it?
You can find it Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Books A Million, Half Price Books. It's out in audiobook. It's out in Kindle. It's out in, you know, other Nook e-readers as well. And you can just look for it. My last name's kind of hard to spell. It's P-A-R-A-N-T-E-A-U. On social media, you can find me at the J Par. That's a whole lot easier to spell.
Okay, perfect. So if people want to learn more from you, that's where they should get in touch with you. Social media, LinkedIn, where would you like them to reach out?
Yeah, LinkedIn, I'm most connected at LinkedIn. However, also on my webpage, it's thejpar.com. Building community. I've been very preoccupied with a book launch, and I just graduated with my MBA on Friday.
Oh, very cool. Congratulations. Awesome.
So if people have been wondering, you know, where I've been for the last, you know, 10 or 12 days, it's finals, but I'm finally done.
Oh, awesome. I just started mine about a month ago. So I hope to follow in your footsteps soon, but it's going to take me a good couple of years, I'm sure.
20 years ago, I said that I started, and this was a 20-year completion, but I was glad I finally went back and finished it up.
Yeah, that's great. Well, congratulations. Congratulations, of course, on the book launch as well. Thank you so much for coming on the show and sharing with us all of this about asymmetric selling. It is strategic, but it's asymmetric selling. Thank you so much, Joe Parenteau. And thank you to all of you guys for joining us for another episode of the Predictable Revenue Podcast. See you next time.